It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey.
So the Cummings household has two new kittens. Not one. We traded one Chipper for two new kittens.
You didn't trade Chipper. You lost Chipper, first of all. It's not a trade.
Personally, I think he still may come back.
Then it'll be a three-cat family. So I'm not welcome up there anymore.
No, I don't think you are. You don't tend to like cats. So,
it's not a matter of liking.
We'll see you later, Wade.
It's the asthmatic condition that follows my time was spent with cats.
Oh, because you hack up hairballs or something like
that. People joke about me wheezing sometimes and we're laughing on the podcast. That's usually because I've been near a cat.
I made the massive mistake, my wife, in searching for Tripper.
For Tripper.
Yes, that's what that thing's like.
Did you name one of the cats Tripper?
No, I'm thinking of naming one of the little guys Mohawk because he just always has got his hair all frizzed out. He's so little, so funny looking, but just, I think, since everything's so new. I mean, I think some people are like this. Honestly, I really do. It's like he's searching around the house, but everything is so new. He's got every sensory thing just on overload. His hair is mohawked everywhere. Nobody wants to call him Mohawk, but I'm going like, that's Mohawk. That's the cat. That's the kitty. That's Mohawk.
I hate to see you go down this road.
Well, you know what? I made the massive mistake of my wife, I think, is at the animal shelter, and she says, you know, so, honey, what do you think? And, you know, as opposed to, like, being the verboten, we're just doing dogs. I said, honey, you know, you got to be the one that takes care of them. My plate's really full, so whatever you would like. I gave her the green light, and she didn't just come back with one. She came back with two.
Oh, this really is going to affect my relationship with Kelly. I have a lot of respect for the woman. I gotta tell you, it's
careful. She listens to this all the time.
What?
You're in trouble.
My wife doesn't. Why does your wife?
She can't wait for each one each week.
Oh man, there you go. No, Sarah listens to them too, but not quite that quickly. I think she's
That's
back. I think she's back in March now, listening to them. Trying to catch up with.
You ever know that I get feedback from a podcast of 6 months ago? You just go like, okay, I haven't the foggiest clue what I said.
Yeah, somebody called me yesterday and said, "Do you remember on some podcast when you said such and such, and which one that is?"
Answer's no.
Yeah, I guess we need an archivist. You know, someone that'll do an archive of
there are
the content.
Archives.
No, that's just titles, man. That's titles and content. But no, it's not. No, we can't keep track of all the stories.
So, Wayne, come over. You got to play with the little kittens.
I'm not coming over to play with kittens. I
do got to just snap a picture of Mohawk.
I thought it was providence. I thought it was providence that your Chipper moved on.
Careful.
I'm just saying. Carefully. Careful.
You're in deep water in the Cummings house right now.
You're about to
drown, Wayne.
I used to love the Cummings household, but it's moving down the list.
Fair weather friend?
No, terrible. No, I'm a dog weather friend. Not fair weather friend. I don't like fairs, actually.
So that's new for us. Two new kittens. Well, one's named Mohawk. The other is Nameless.
Congratulations.
It's funny.
Today's a crazy day for me. I'm trying to pack up and get on a flight tomorrow morning to go up to
Alberta, Canada.
What is it with the Canadians?
I'm going nuts for the shack, man. I get 2-3 calls a day.
Well, they're supposed to be calling Brad. Brad's got his own distribution up there now. A different Brad. Brad not Cummings has got his own.
Yes.
But, man, yeah, Ontario in July, headed for Alberta tomorrow, and then up in B.C. in October. And then now I got people writing from Saskatchewan and Manitoba saying, hey, what's wrong with us? How come you're not coming up here? So
you just have to do the whole tour of the Great White North.
I'm trying. 3 in 4 months, that's a lot. I'm telling you, I don't know how much Canadian stuff I can take, but we'll find out.
Now that you've offended them, less and less.
We'll see how the hospitality is. But the Carolina folks still want us to come down there. One of us.
Woohoo!
We've not been yet, so.
I'm still threatening
one of these days.
Next month.
In the next month.
Well, we have to do a whole bunch of promotional things for the Ten Commandments. It's coming out October 19th.
In Carolina?
It's going out nationwide. They're going to be able to see them in the Carolinas.
Are you guys buying an ad on our website? Or are you just going to use all this for all the free publicity?
I'm
going to
use it for free.
I can see that.
Got a great web banner for you to put up. No, you know what's really cool?
I'm glad you don't know how to work the website.
I know. Thanks a lot. What's really cool is it's getting a lot of neat response from folks, and I'm pleased with it, because at the end of the day, it presents the fact that God desires to have a relationship with each and every one of us and wants to talk to each and every one of us. So that's new for the Ten Commandments.
Wow. That'll be cool.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that. Do I get it on a premiere showing or something?
Yeah, I'm sure there's one happening, but all of that is in, like, the last minute. You know, they save everything for the last month before it launches. So if there's a premiere, I'll let you come.
Okay. With the Cummings household, who are now my best friends?
I think you'll have to sit out back with the dogs, pal. Oh.
Hey, I don't mind that. I'd just soon sit with the dogs than with a bunch of stupid, arrogant cats.
Oh, stop it. These are cute little kittens, one with a mohawk.
That's the only time a cat's good, is when they're a cute little kitten. But
we'll
that only lasts 3 months.
We'll just keep them in kittenhood.
You got to take out their pituitary gland. That's not good.
What? I'm not doing surgery on cats.
How are you going to keep them kittens then?
I don't have no idea.
I just told you how you had to do it. I'm not recommending it at all.
I'm not thinking they survive that, Wayne.
I'm not sure that's what the system doesn't do at times. Take our pituitary gland out.
Oh, now there you go down an interesting
trail.
Well,
how about that little segue? We had a lot of reader, listener reaction to,
the whole system thing?
Well, just talking about it. The guy who even sent us the letter that we read from the district superintendent, he has a big meeting with his local board last night, I think. Got email from him this morning, and he just said our conversation really helped him, but he ran into the same thing with his own board there as you reading through the letter, that, yeah, man, we love what you're hungering for, and we appreciate your struggle, and blah, blah, but as a tribe, we do things.
See, what's so amazing is individuals can be wonderful, but a system can't go there.
No.
A system almost becomes its own entity and has its own self-preservation instincts that are contrary to the growth of individuals, because that could be at the expense of the system.
Yeah, because now we've got to stop treating you just like a friend, but now it's
a rule and a policy.
How you are going to affect this thing that we have, that we've all agreed that we want to live this way, and if you're a threat to that, or if you don't like it, we love you, but you have to move on. Wow. We got a lengthy letter. Did you see that letter from one gal? I think it was in Australia.
Terry?
Yeah. Been through just a nightmare of things with some relationships and new people coming in and hungers that wouldn't be serviced inside of it all, and now finds herself probably on the outs looking in, but still has a passion for the people that are there. And I think that's the conflict that a lot of us feel. On the one side of it, people who defend the system at the expense of relationship, and then the other risk on the other side is people who leave that systemed area and still want the relationships, but that's sometimes complicated too.
Yeah, I think it's all a function of where people are at in this journey. I think I know that for folks that are just like all of a sudden getting excited about the Lord, but perhaps the person that's been a catalyst for that has been within the system, they don't just get excited about the Lord. It's you get excited about the Lord and fill in the blank. And it's this, you got to come along and be a part of this whole thing. That's what excitement for the Lord plays out to look like. And if that's what someone has been fed in the early days of kind of their relationship, all of a sudden they're trained to look at the system. And so someone is challenging the system, gosh, total disconnect and confusion for the young people going like, well, I don't get that. But I think once you've been in it for a while and you recognize, wait a minute, this isn't what I was saying yes to. I wasn't buying a system. I was following a person that captured my heart. And then there's the whole disconnect of how come we can't just follow relationships? How come if I'm not a part of the club, why do I have to then be in exile?
Yeah, why can't we still be friends even if I'm not part of that whole deal?
Yeah.
I think everybody tries to maintain that. But I know for me, when I was in charge of managing one of those things, once people no longer came to what we were doing, I didn't feel a responsibility to them anymore because I couldn't keep up with the people who were there. But notice how distorted that sounds. I don't have responsibility. So it was never a friendship anyway. It was just a responsibility I had. And if you're not there, well, there's lots of people who are here, and we want to serve them, obviously, because that serves, in a weird way, serving them serves me and my sense of success or whatever. And it just, instead of, yeah, we get to be friends and friends of friends and love each other and encourage each other to what God asks and not try to conform it to the same looking thing.
Well, yeah, loving people, in big quotes, is an issue of what does it do for my bottom line that I'm building? And so it becomes a sort of purpose and goal-oriented dynamic, as opposed to just loving people for the sake that they're worthy of being loved. Yeah. And that's what we're here to do.
Right.
It's to love and care for each other. You get on some other kick where you're just going like, and it's really subtle. I mean, I remember I just, you know, if someone wasn't a part of our group, I don't think I consciously understood the conclusions I was drawing from, but it's like, well, then I need to take care of the ones that are.
Right, because if they're not, then I might be a sheep stealer. And who wants to be a sheep stealer? You know, I'd rather be a cow kicker than a sheep stealer. And that's that accusation that gets everybody freaked out. No one wants to be a sheep stealer, which is kind of the excuse to say, I just have to focus on these folks. But what's harder to give up, I think, is once you've got a group with a thing, and if it's a building or a program or a ritual or a creed, we got a thing that now, if anybody messes with that thing.
Yeah, they're an enemy. They're a threat.
Well, not necessarily an enemy, but yeah, a threat. Just, I don't know what to do with you if you want to. I come here because I like this. I like this song service. I like being yelled at for 45 minutes, told what a lousy person I am. And according to my Dave Coleman friend who helped me write the Jake book, he will tell you that people, really religious people, need a good beating once in a while just because it feels good to their own sense of failure that, yeah, I've been beat up again, and yeah, I'm sorry, and yes, I'm going to try harder.
Reaffirm my commitment.
Yeah, and that reaffirms something. So when somebody says, hey, maybe we could do this differently, I think it is the things, whether particularly if it's money and buildings and property and program, don't mess with this stuff. We all come here because we like this stuff, so don't mess with it. And that's where the threat kicks in. We may really like you as a person, but you're messing with the thing that we like, first of all, and then we have come to believe this is the way Jesus meant for his church to exist in the world. So if you mess with that, you're messing with Jesus. And
I think that's a smokescreen. I don't know if, I mean, maybe there's a few diehards that absolutely believe that, but I think the reality, just take one step further behind the veil, I think the reality for most of the folks leading that, this system, this thing, is their anchor of security. This is where my paycheck, my sustenance, my resource comes from. Therefore, out of homage, I must care for it.
Right.
And you threaten that, you're threatening my security. And I don't think the math happens at a brainwave level of clearly seeing that. That really is what's happened.
I don't think I see it either, because I think on the surface the rationale is, mentally, this is the way Jesus meant his church to function. This is the way leadership is. This is the way, the only right way. And surprisingly enough, we're the only group getting it right. All the other groups in town aren't getting it as right as we're getting it. But that being beside the point, I think the Hebrews 10:25, the whole idea of, this is the way it was meant to be. It is what the rationale is that keeps people from looking outside of it or even encouraging people who have hungers outside of it. Because you can't mess with this. I do think it is because of their own personal security issues with it. I do think that's the bedrock thing, but that's covered over with this veneer of, but this is how Jesus told us to do it.
And you know what's so strange is that Jesus seemed to always, amidst the crowd, he always had time for the individual, and it wasn't an authorized individual. It didn't matter whether they were, quote, in or out or could be defined as such.
It could be Pharisees or sinners.
Yeah,
yeah.
He seemed to not lose the individual amidst the crowd, and I sat there going, like, gosh, that was when I was pastoring, that was one of the biggest challenges, is I had to sort of care for this big throng. And that's a heady task. It's like, that made me feel important. Being busy was a value.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's like, you're looking at
the Christian sin.
And so I found myself scurrying around under the weight of that and losing touch with the individuals in front of me in terms of just their needs. And I remember that that would not me at night. You're just going like, that is not what Jesus did. Jesus did the exact opposite. What am I missing here? That started the disquiet. I recognized, wait a minute. That's, if we had a model, if there was such a thing as a model, it would be the man Christ Jesus. And so little of what I understood as professional ministry followed that example. And I sat there going like, what's wrong with this?
That was the disconnect for me, because if you think this is the only way Jesus wants us to do things, lined up in rows, 10 o'clock Sunday morning, mini concert, mini lecture, elder managed program, you can't find one iota of that in the teachings of Jesus to the disciples. You don't find it there. I was reading yesterday even just the birth of the church again in the book of Acts, and here's a group of people that did not have a system to impose on what was happening. The Holy Spirit did something that brought a whole lot of people in contact with who Jesus, the resurrected Christ. And then you got disciples and everybody's going, well, you know, here's how. And all they seem to be doing was, we're trying to teach people who this Jesus is and how to follow him. Not, we're trying to, we'll get a home.
This.
Yeah, we'll get a home church management task force going over there. And depending on where you live, you got to go to this group, or you don't find any of that. But you do find that out of that, people ended up in homes with each other. They ended up caring about each other and selling goods to help people who were in need. You found a whole lot of care going on that didn't seem to be managed till later in Acts, where there's some problems with that too. But you don't find the early angst was, we've got to create a system to contain it. So much more was, God's doing something. Let's be part of it and love the folks that God's bringing into our path as part of it. And so it was more the individual loving life than ever was, hey, let's start something and let's manage something.
If you take a step back, what do you see going on? I mean, you know, yes, you could, it's a time of deconstruction. I mean, you can talk about it in erudite forms and all the different seminary language, but what do you think's going on? Because there was a sharp response to the whole system thing. It's like, you know, you pull back and you're like, oh, it's a system?
Yeah.
So what do you think's going on?
In what?
Big picture context. What do you see happening? Is it just that people are becoming dissatisfied, or is God got up to something that you can identify?
Yeah, well, I had to get into the God's up to something, because I think God's always up to something. I think God was up to something 20, 30, 40 years ago, and I think it's up to something.
You know, it's not just now the cutting edge.
Yeah, I think God's up to something all the time. Jesus said, my Father's always working. But I do think we're seeing the implosion of religion as a system. Now, there are lots of groups that meet on Sunday morning that are more like families that have grown up together that don't have all this overlay of conformity and all that we talk about. I do know groups like that.
And those are healthy and fine.
I've been with groups like that, and I think that is fine. The system we're talking about is not people meet on Sunday morning. It's that whole religious obligation, conformity-based, my life in Christ is now my conforming to a creed and a ritual, not being equipped to know him. And I do think we've seen in the last 30, 40 years an increasing number of these mega groups and whatever, that in the end of it is, I'm just a cog in a big machine. One of the things that Terry said was that she had been part of this thing for a long time, but had lost her own relationship with Jesus in it. And that to me is when the system has become more important than anything else, is we do. We get so involved managing things that we lose the life of Jesus. I think there's just a lot of hungry people that are turning around saying, I got into this because I love Jesus, and I want to get back to the reality of that relationship. And that's, then you start seeing through the system, and yes, more and more people seemingly around the world are seeing through that and hungering for what's next. What can I find now?
Yeah, and I don't want to get ooky spooky here, but you know, I think so oftentimes the repetitive story is where people started out with good intentions. Their heart was kind of pure in responding to its passion. Then all of a sudden you dump some measure of numbers success, and it almost seems like that's the undoing, which is going, well, why should that be some kind of undoing? And it's as if once you create an it, there's something that can be inhabitable by something other than Jesus. And I'm not going to demonize the entire, you know, body, but it's like as soon as you have something that is an entity, it almost takes on a life of its own. And you can still have pure, wonderful little hearts that are trying to do their best, but they get sucked up into the service of something other than what began everything.
No, absolutely. And I think you can do that without even trying to create something. I'll give you a good example. Some of those that have been on the forum this week, and it's brought up some wonderful conversation about the forum that I hope we get to talk about if we have time in this podcast. But there's a little bit of conflict, and so I stepped in.
Name calling going on.
Yeah, I stepped in to say, you know, we don't need to talk that way here. I think we can be more adults than that. Plus, there was a whole lot of people writing me saying, oh, you got to ban this person. You got to, and I'm just like, oh, boy. Now, see, we didn't mean to create a thing. We just hopefully had a place where people who
we didn't even create it. So
we did create a forum. No, I created the forum. Okay. Well, somebody else helped me manage, helped me put it together. But we just wanted to provide a place where people could interact about these podcasts and have a place to share their own journey and have a place to connect with people in their region. That was the whole desire of it. Well, now, if a few people come in and they want to be rude and obnoxious in dealing with other people so that people who came here to kind of share their journeys feel like they've got to leave, because it's just so highly conflicted. It got to that point, just so highly conflicted that I was getting email from people saying, we're leaving the list. And so now the deal is, so what do we do about it? If relationship if you fix it relationship, say, hey, here's what's going on. Can we throttle it back a little bit? And some of you, but does it mean then I have to actually throw people out?
Yeah.
And I just sit here and go, oh, yuck.
Yeah, no, I'm not going there.
Oh, I would close the forum first. I really would before I get the place of having to play policeman. Here's what I was asked today in an email. This is a good friend of mine up from Idaho, Dwight, and he writes, he said, as a person who watched the forum start and grow, the recent developments have been troubling. I do appreciate your heart and desire in the matter. I also recognize that you're trying not to control or police the site. I don't blame you. But it does raise an interesting issue regarding freedom and structure. If a person's freedom is destructive to another, is it okay to restrict that freedom? I'm still sorting out the tension between a free, fully relational walk with Christ and how that often works together with a greater body. I do get together with different folks often, but I can't say it's a community as I think about it. Anyway, very grateful for your heart and desire to help. I think that really...
That's a great question.
Isn't that a fabulous thing? And I think that's what all the... Once people start getting together, and if we're going to pool money, have facility, or whatever, then the question is, what do we do with the problem people? As we talked about tonight, the relationally challenged are one of those. The agenda-driven folks are another, who now... And I think that's part of it with the forum. There's a lot of people who come to that forum, and people who... You know, I've got this bully pulpit agenda that they can't seem to find any outlet because none of their friends want to listen to them blather on about some of these things that I just think are weird. They find a bully pulpit and they can come on and no one says you can't and post as much as you want. No rules about that because we wanted to have people have a free and open discussion. Well, for a number of years, that's been wonderful and a lot of good things have happened. We've had a bump in the road here and there. And then lately, it's just gotten more and more of people want to use the forum for their own deal rather than let it be what it's there for. Now, the question is, can relationships handle that?
See, I do think that that's the challenge because I think the impatient mistake would be to just throw up a rule or a policy and say, well, you know, and so you can ban an individual or you can kick that person off. And then it's like, you know what? It doesn't seem like that's how Jesus was relating.
Right.
To even trouble people that found him.
Right.
You know? I think the call is to actually seek to engage in relationship and to create a dialogue amidst the problems. Who in their life doesn't have some?
If you can, but see, it'd be so much easier if this were in my front room and a group of people and some people got rude and obnoxious and you could say, hey, let's go outside or next time we have folks over, I'm probably not inviting you because relationally that could be handled much easier in a
technology like this where it's not really that direct.
Yeah, in this internet forum. Where you don't know people, and you can't take them outside and say, hey, could we help you with whatever your issue is? Because all the rest of us aren't coming to hear you blather on from your bully pulpit. We're not. We're here to share the life of Jesus together and to grow in that. And I think relationships can handle that. I think on the forum, I think we've made some good adjustments the last couple of days. So I'm hoping that, yeah, maybe we could just stop and do it relationally. But I think we even see signs in Acts of the early church doing, and I think we're even warned about it. I think everything that happens in Acts didn't happen in Acts, so we could follow it as an example. I think
the Ananias and Sapphira ministry.
Yeah, I was thinking more of let's appoint the deacons. The problem is we've got widows who aren't being fed, So here's what we need to do. We need to appoint seven people who will do it for us. And so we're going to do an institutional fix. Instead of, I think a relational fix would be to say to the body, hey, here's some people being ignored. Let's let Jesus check our hearts about that. And if God puts something on your heart, I want to encourage you to do it. And let's free that to the body to fix it, rather than the apostle saying, look, we're too good for this. So let us give ourselves to the preaching of the word and to prayer. And there isn't a pastor, including you and me, that didn't use that scripture to say, this ain't my job, all this practical garbage stuff. I've got to be ready for Sunday morning sermon.
But Philip was one of those guys they picked, and he didn't, a few chapters later,
he's not waiting table.
He's not there anymore.
And I think that's a part of the hint from Acts to say, this wasn't a great fix.
Yes.
This was a problem.
Yeah, my little flag there, I don't think it was an institutional fix with an institutional mindset that says you're elected from here till you die kind of approach. I think that they picked some people that could be trusted individuals to help facilitate
because
a solution
for that. Because the disciples were too important for it. That was the reason. But two chapters, like you said, it's Stephen, it's Philip. These are the guys on the cutting edge.
They're
of
not at the food bin anymore.
Yeah, no, they're not there, but it's the ones God's using. It's not the guys who've decided to closet themselves in prayer. They're having to chase down behind Philip, behind Stephen, to take care of things because they were kind of off the cutting edge. Because I think they really did say, let's institutionally fix something. And God said, I'm going to show you I'm bigger than that. And I'm going to use Stephen and Philip in ways that go way beyond waiting on tables. And I think God moved it on that way. Whether or not, this is one question I had with Gail Irwin, author of Jesus Style, one day, as a group I'd helped planted was kind of imploding. I said, how long do you think a church should exist? And by that, I was using the old definition of a group of people who combine together. And he said, I think about 12 years. I said, really? I was thinking seven. Because I think the planting of something with a lot of friendships, there's a lot of excitement about that. But I think over 6, 7, 8 years, you build in a bunch of rules and rituals and procedures just because, well, we had this problem, so now to avoid this problem, we'll make this rule. And to avoid that problem, we'll make this rule. And hopefully fix that, we'll do this. And by 8, 9 years out, all you're doing is following all the rules you created. And that freshness of God leading us into friendships is gone. And it may be, as it might be with the forum at some point. If it degenerates into the kind of thing I thought it was headed for last week, I would someday say, let's just close it for a while.
Yeah,
let's pull the plug. Other people can start other forums, and it can grow again. The question is, how much does freedom for everybody involve restricting freedom for some?
I think it does. Because families have to work like that. I got a couple of kids, and say I younger, immature ones smacking the other. Do I, as a parent, go like, well, you know, I'm just all about freedom? No, you step in and you stop harm that's happening.
Yep.
But do I then install myself as the forever policeman? No, it's done in the context of an incident, a situation, and instruction and love and direction that happens in a context. I think it's when you start to just say, well, I'm going to manage this by the imposition of rules. I think that's where you start taking a step down a wrong road.
So you're offering to be dad of the forum?
No, not at all.
It's easier in a family where there's a dad and you've got young kids. It's different when your kids are adult aged, don't live here anymore. Then there's still not going to let somebody beat somebody up in my house.
Yeah, you do this on the corner out there at the bus stop. If all of a sudden somebody was harming somebody else, I'll guarantee you Wayne Jacobson would step in and do something.
Yeah, but at the same time, I might step in and do something. I'm looking around saying, where's a policeman when you need one? Because I'd rather have the guy with the gun doing it than me.
Sure.
I'm getting old. People can beat me up.
But in the context of life, I think that that's where it is the internal prompting and responding to a responsibility that the Holy Spirit would tug at that says, you know what? You know something here. There's a maturity here that you have inside that can step in and bring help and healing to this. Now, there's no guarantee it's going to turn out positive.
Right. But to me, that's what eldering is.
Yes.
If you want to talk, I was an elder in the body of Christ. It's a mature.
It's not a post. It's a function.
It's a mature brother and sister that's willing to insert themselves between someone's abuse of freedom and someone getting hurt, and trying to help the person who's the abuser,
yeah,
and trying to help the one who's being abused.
Helping the whole thing grow up.
That's right, and helping people connect in a more meaningful way. And I think it's easier for us to say, I'd rather have a system. fix that for me. I want to go a place that's more secure. Just make the rules. I decide who stands up on Sunday morning and says something. Other people don't get to decide that, so we don't have to risk the agenda-stealing person coming into the room and using it for a bully pulpit. But I do think the cost of doing that robs the body of being a community that has to grow up, deal with their own differences, and maturely has to handle a problem rather than saying, where's the cops? Get them to fix it.
See, that's where Christ is formed in us.
Absolutely.
In those situations, it's like, it'd be nice if you never had to deal with that. But guess what? You probably wouldn't grow and mature very much.
Yep.
Seems to me it's in all those kind of hassle arenas.
Yep.
Where you're just going like, gosh, how do I navigate that? I am forced into a place of dependent leaning on Jesus, on the Holy Spirit to say, help. What's wisdom in this moment? You all see the suffer the ills of inaction.
Yeah.
We're just going like, okay, if we do nothing, this is what it degenerates, and we all just, well, I'm out of here.
That's probably what we're learning right now in terms of how to be the, or Dwight saying, I don't really have a, I hang up with lots of people, don't really have a community right now. And part of that is because a community is a group of friends who connect in a way that provides a healthy life together. And I think we're still struggling with that. I think we're still looking for somebody to manage a community so I can just go and be a part of it instead of growing up and take some responsibility in it as well.
To me, it's always been a helpful dynamic to put the overlay of how does a family function? Well, in the early years of raising children, it's clear who the mommy and daddy are. As a family grows up and matures and the children become adult children, adults of their own, the issues of authority and hierarchy dissipate. And you don't relate.
Ideally
they do.
Yep.
And you don't relate in the same dynamic. And then it's like the authority issues aren't the issues of the day. It is more relational in how you work that out. And it's when you bring people that are not part of a genetic family together, I'm not suggesting you vote on who's the daddy.
Oh, that's good.
Okay.
But you already got a father.
Yeah, but the dynamic is where there is relationships that are formed, you know, typically there is an initiator someplace. And a lot of times that person is a little more mature, a little, you know, farther down the road.
Or a little more needy for a position, which is often a problem.
It can
as well.
Be.
It often is.
But if it's not, if there's a measure of health, the issues, you don't need to elect and identify. That's the guy in charge. If it's in his heart and there's the ability to bring it out, just bring it forth.
I just wrote a new article for Body Life, first one in about 8 months. I've been behind. But it's friends and friends of friends. And the last part of the article gets to, I think, what we're talking about now, and I won't repeat it all here. But it talks about if we're friends and friends of friends, and that's how we begin to gather and task together and do what God calls us to do, there's room for the kind of honesty in a room when somebody's doing stuff that's a little whacked, where people just say, well, hold on a minute. And I think it takes a more mature person. It just takes an honest person. I've sat in so many home groups where somebody's hijacked the deal, and no one's got the courage to speak up, though everybody in the room knows it. I think that's true on the forum, too. When somebody says something really stupid, and then everybody feels like they get on and bash that person for being stupid, I think 90% of the people in the room know the first posting was a little
whacked,
crazy. I won't say idiotic, because we said we wouldn't use that word on the forum. But I think people, if you just let it go, it'll die its own death. But when you jump on it and criticize it, it
fuel to the fire.
It gives it life and it makes something valuable in us. Well, I wonder, I know we're getting toward the end of this, but I want to read just a lot of it because it brought up this forum thing has brought me tons of email I didn't have time to deal with this week, but I have tried to. And I loved it because some people see, and I popped in on the forum first time, in ages. And God continues to point me toward living it with others I actually see in touch rather than online. Another guy told me, you know, the forum for me early on was like training wheels. And I needed to learn how to live and think and live relationally. And now I just rarely go there because I much prefer the face-to-face thing, which I...
That's wonderful.
I love that.
That's wonderful.
The ideal
the
area...
The forum was never meant to be a substitute for people's relationships, but it was a context that, look, if you find yourself kind of alone...
Yep.
You're not.
Yeah.
And here's a communication tool that will help you process what's going on. And there's probably interested others who will help do that with you.
And there's probably a time when everyone else around you is not validating your hunger. There's a deal to be with a larger room full of people who are validating your hungers and your passions. And that's valuable. I like that training wheels analogy. There'll just come a time when I just don't have time for that because I'm face-to-face dealing with people that I really love and enjoy doing. Someone even came to that point about the podcast as a whole, and I got this note from Hayden. First of all, I just want to say thanks a heaps for these podcasts. They've helped me too much. Oh, so much. And just making things simple, helping me see through all the religious mindsets I once had. The crazy thing God has shown me in the past few months, that when I left the church, I began to replace my pastor with these podcasts. And he has started to slowly lead me away. I just want to say thank you for finding some time in your busy lives to record these. They've helped me so much. But he's on his way, not just to the forum, he's on the way saying, I put those podcasts even in a place in my life that God didn't need them.
Yeah, there's this whole surrogate savior syndrome that people get into where it's like, okay, I recognize, well, gosh, I was making that kind of a replacement for Jesus. But then as opposed to really going on in the directness of an intimate fellowship with him, you can fill that void with a whole myriad of religious substitutes.
That's right. And this podcast could be one of those. The forum could be one of those. I've never read a better reason to give up the podcast and unsubscribe than that right there. I realized it was becoming my pastor.
See you, Hayden. Good job.
Yeah, bless you on the way out the door. Hope you come back for a visit once in a while. Here's another note for Stephen from Graham. Stephen from Texas. This is a note from Stephen in Texas. He just wanted to drop you a note and say thanks to you and Brad for the latest podcast on systems. It was a great help to me personally. I've been endeavoring far too long to try and change the institution or system from the inside when all the while God's been encouraging me simply to love people. Isn't it amazing that you can end up doing what the system does, hurting people, by trying to force them to see things the way you do, outside the box, relationally, etc. Isn't that good?
That's profound right there.
Then he says, I have a good friend who, though he attends one of the institutional churches here in town, has matured to the point where he can go week after week because of the people there whose lives he wants to touch. He says that he's not in bondage to the system. He stays out of the politics. I ask how you can sit and endure so much of the law that's uttered from the front. His reply was, I'll stay for the praise, and when then I go home if I feel like it. Wow. He says, before I let you go, hope you guys are always saying, or y'all, have you guys ever considered doing more podcasts on such subjects as sonship, not slavehood, grace, not law, giving, not tithing? I mean, slavehood, law, tithing are things that characterize most institutions. Yeah, we do. We're against all those. And yeah, one day we might podcast. I mean, those themes will be around, I'm sure, fairly frequently. But I love it. I love how people are responding in real ways. What I love about these last little bits of notes that I've read to you is just people are looking beyond just finding another way to do things that someone tells them how to do.
Yeah.
But are really looking to respond to Jesus wherever he places
growing
them.
Growing up in him.
Yes. And living that life and that being more fun than anything you can do on the internet.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
See, I think if we keep in mind that there are points of graduation and leaps that you sort of take in this journey where what God used in one season was wonderfully valuable and valid, he's not necessarily going to use in another.
Or not necessarily valid. Some things he uses that, you know, it's just junk. We gave him junk. He used junk because junk's okay with him.
And, okay. I think the reason I use the word valid is because I think so oftentimes there's this desire to, well, is this okay? Is this not okay? You know what? It's what he used.
Yeah.
It was valuable for what he used and what you got out of it.
Yeah.
Don't make an it out of it. Just keep growing on.
And you wouldn't be where you were today if you didn't go through that.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have been. So
be it good or bad.
So you don't have to hate it. You don't have to bash it. Just appreciate what God has done even beyond it, even beyond some of the brokenness of it. This from Jerry in Canada. Tell Brad, I've been really enjoying listening to you guys on the podcast. I can really see how Father uses our differences to complement us. And how you and Brad relate to one another. So I guess we don't agree on everything.
No, not even.
Still hoping you'll grow wiser over time. I'm just hoping you'll grow wiser over time. That's all it is.
I'll try. Thank you.
All righty. Well, boy, great emails, great responses. Headed to Canada. See y'all later.
Bye.
Thank you for traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.